You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Thursday episode, my co-host Nick Lee. Another day of training camp in the books. It was a hot one out there today. Glad to have you listening in. It's going to be a jam-packed episode, as always. Going to be sharing some observations from the second practice at the VMAC today and taking a closer look at the safety group. Got a couple big names that are up for new contracts. We'll be diving into some topics at that position. NBA Draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA Draft host Rafael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Carolus will be live this year covering the NBA Draft. It's Locked On NBA Draft 2021, brought to you by Built Bar. Get local expert analysis on each pick. Follow Locked On NBA on YouTube today and watch our live coverage on July 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We're now 2 days into training camp. And while this is not a surprise development at all, Jamal Adams and Duane Brown have yet to participate in practice. They've been bystanders the last couple of days. This was to be expected, at least on Jamal Adams' part. We knew he was going to be reporting as of a few days ago, but really no reason for him to be participating into practice until he has that new contract.
And Pete Carroll even hinted that even if there was no contract disputes or negotiations going on, that health-wise, not sure he'd be practicing yet. So maybe a bit of a moot point there. And panic level still very much near zero here for both these guys. Jamal Adams, I mean, clearly both sides want to get a deal done. I know you were saying, you were telling me before the show that the gap is still there, but it's that can change really quickly. That can change as we're doing the show. That can change in the early hours of the morning before practice tomorrow, whatever. And so at least my panic level with especially Duane Brown and Jamal Adams is next to zero. These are big boys. They're veterans now, especially Duane Brown. He's getting long in the tooth, and I'm not worried in the least. At least they're both here and at practice. They both reported they both could be making some big stink and holding out, and they're here and they're clearly working through stuff in the front office. The front office doesn't want this hanging over the team any more than the fans do. You're talking about possibly two of the, you know, top four most impactful Seahawks, not named Russell Wilson, on the team. And so they're going to want to get this done. So this is July 29th. We're not even into August yet. So I think we all need to press the brakes a little bit. We're still over 2 weeks away from our first preseason game. So I think we just need to let this play out a bit. They just reported to camp. Guys are still catching their breath and still kind of shaking off the rust. We have a long way to go.
Yeah, it's end of July. There's no reason to panic that these two guys are not on the field. Now, if one of them had a significant injury, that's a different story. But Adams is several months removed from his surgery. I anticipate that once the contract extension has been reached, that he is going to be taking the field, at least in a limited fashion. They're going to slowly work his way back into the swing of things, and then they're going to get him back into the lineup, and that's the goal for both sides. They both are motivated to get this deal done. So I still am sticking with what I have said the last couple of days. I still anticipate that this deal is going to be done here in the next week or so. I don't think this is going to be one of those situations that looms over the player and the team deep into August when we get close to the regular season. I anticipate the Seahawks and Adams are going to be able to bridge that gap and make this work. As for Duane Brown, I don't know necessarily that he's in a position at his age. He's going to be 36 next month. I don't know if he's in a position where he's chasing money at this stage of his career. He's going into his 14th season. He's going to want paid. You want paid for your services. And he's been one of the best tackles in the NFL for a long time. So he's going to want that payment. He's going to want that respect, because that's what money really is for these players. It's a sign of respect, and he deserves that. But at the same time, I don't know necessarily that his situation is similar to Jamal Adams, in the sense that I don't know if this is going to necessarily result in there being a quick extension this time, because he's an older player And as far as his workload goes, the guy hardly practiced last year, and look how well he played. He's been in the league a long time. As you mentioned, these guys are big boys, especially Duane Brown. He is literally a big boy, and he looks fantastic getting to see him on the field today. Not practicing, but with the offensive lineman off to the side. He's in outstanding shape as always. He knows how to take care of his body. And so I don't think there's going to be any issues there. Last year, they were able to pretty much not have him practice throughout the entire week. He did a lot of mental reps, did walkthroughs, and played some of his best football on Sundays. I can see the Seahawks replicating that. Again, he's to the point now, at least for the first couple weeks of training camp, he just does not need those practices. The Seahawks have some other veterans that are like that. Even Bobby Wagner mentioned today, you know, sometimes you got to work smarter when you get to be an older player. That's what the Seahawks have done with Duane Brown, because they know behind the scenes that he is putting the work in to make sure he is physically and mentally prepared to be able to excel on game day.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, pump the brakes a little bit, change the oil, you know, make sure everything's good to go there before you rev the engines for the regular season. And I think it's important to remember, especially as you mentioned, Duane Brown, 186 games, going to be 36 years old. He does not need practices in July. He's okay. I know the one concern is, yes, it's a new offense, but I think with his abilities
for him,
no, yeah. It's not an issue for him. If it was, you know, a first round draft pick that was doing this and you want to get him in there, you want to get him reps and get him working on the new offense, yeah, that'd be concerning. But we're talking about a guy who has like a decade of experience, several different offenses, or more than a decade of experience, almost a decade and a half of experience. I think that he's going to be okay.
And he played for a bunch of different offensive coordinators in Houston. We know how much of a wreck that it's been there at times. So I don't have any concerns about him being prepared. He's going to put the mental work in that needs to be done. I'm sure he knows the offense now anyway. And I'm anticipating, at least for the O-line, that there's going to be some significant carryover with Mike Solari still being the O-line coach. And they have added Andy Dickerson as the run game coordinator. They're going to be mixing in more wide zone runs, more under center stuff. But Duane Brown has done that stuff, so that's not going to be an issue. And Jamal Adams, when he returns, he was much more comfortable in this defense in the second half last year. He energized this group, and his production was off the charts, especially as a pass rusher. We'll talk about that more later in the show. But I feel like if he comes in a week or 2 weeks into training camp, not going to be a big deal. You're going to be able to get him right up to speed quickly. Again, he's going to have to work his way back anyway, coming off those surgeries. He's going to be fine. The goal is get those guys as ready as possible for week one when the real bullets start flying. And I'm confident both those guys will be completely ready to go when the Seahawks head to Indianapolis on September 12th. When we return for the second quarter, going to share some observations from another eventful day at the VMAC, their second training camp practice of the season. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. The Seahawks back on the field today for their second training camp practice at the VMAC. Fans in attendance, over 2,000 fans, according to the Seahawks, and they were cheering loud and proud throughout the practice. It was a hot one out there, mid to upper 80s. Down in the field, if you're over by the cement, by the stadium, by the practice facility, it was well above 90 degrees. It was a hot one out there, sweltering heat for the Pacific Northwest. Not quite last month, those 100-degree days that we had, but still very warm for the second training camp practice. Let's talk some things that happened today. Obviously, Nick, I was in attendance. You've had an opportunity to catch up on what happened today. Let's start with a little bit of X's and O's. And some of our listeners will be really interested in this because we don't always dive into this type of stuff. But last year, one of the most interesting developments, when the Seahawks were starting to turn things around in the second half, they were running a lot of what are called bear fronts, at least that Pete Carroll's bear fronts, not 4-6 bear like the Bears used to run. But Pete Carroll's got his own bear front. It's a 5-2 is really what it is. Five defensive linemen and two linebackers. And I just noticed this with the players they've got, the personnel that they have, Darrell Taylor, Alden Smith, as well as Benson Mayoa, those three players being those hybrid linebackers, it seems like with them shifting towards using more of these bear fronts, it's more like a 3-4 look where they've got two overhanging outside linebackers. And really the Sam linebacker spot and the Leo defensive end position have kind of become interchangeable. And that's exciting when you consider the three players they have that can play those spots in a pinch.
Yeah, I mean, versatility is the name of the game, and especially on this defense. And clearly Pete Carroll has valued versatility his entire time in Seattle. And a guy like Darrell Taylor has clearly shown, I mean, even at Tennessee, you watched this. I actually had the pleasure of watching him in person, and he was all over the field. I wasn't specifically watching him every play, but every time I was actually rooting against him in the BYU game, like, man, this Darrell Taylor guy is all over the place. He's standing up. He's on the ground. He's doing this. He's left and right. And that is so invaluable in this kind of defense. And you mentioned it; it is kind of a faux 3-4. And you want those the Sam and Leo. You want the guys that are going to be lighter than your typical defensive lineman, true defensive ends, a bit more athletic, and guys that can not only rush the passer but read screens, blow them up,
drop back in coverage,
drop back in coverage. Yeah, and really, you're asking him basically to do anything a linebacker should be able to do. And also defensive ends, which is basically it's become a hybrid. So a guy like Darrell Taylor, I think, is a perfect fit for this. And I think it's going to be – I have very, very high hopes for Darrell Taylor. I think that he has the athletic tools to really succeed in this defense specifically. And you mentioned there's depth there as well. Benson Mayoa and Alden Smith. Boy, you tweeted a picture of him. And if he can get on the field and stay on the field, I know there's legal stuff floating around. But, boy – He's one of those guys I was telling Corbin before the show. He's one of the guys that if you want to intimidate the other team, you let Alden Smith walk off the bus first. I mean, he just looks the part, and he just looks like, I mean, he doesn't just look it. He's been uber productive in the NFL when he's been on the field. So if you got a guy like that lurking around with Darrell Taylor and Benson Mayoa playing in those two spots, Sam and Leo, wow, what options. I mean, Ken Norton Jr., Pete Carroll should just be, you know, having sugar plums and rainbows dancing around their heads as they go to sleep at night with all these options they got.
Yeah, it's incredible if they can have all three of those players. Like you said, it's a big if because of Alden Smith's situation. But if you can have all three of those players available, the flexibility that it gives you on Sundays when you're trying to turn up the heat, especially in obvious pass rushing situations, you can rotate those three players. You can have Darrell Taylor and Alden Smith playing your two edge rusher positions, and you can interchange them because both of them are athletic enough. Alden Smith, at his size, can drop back in coverage. Watching the last 2 days, he looks really fluid doing so. So he's just a freak for his size. And he's basically Carlos Dunlap's size, maybe half an inch shorter, and he is really fluid in coverage. And obviously Darrell Taylor can do that as well with his linebacker background at Tennessee, played linebacker and defensive end there. And Benson Mayoa is a little smaller defensive end that's really athletic, and they dropped him in coverage some last year. Even Alton Robinson did that occasionally. So you could even argue they've got four bodies that they can semi do that with. But those first three that we mentioned, the ability to just be able to mix and match those guys, and with some of the other rushers they have, like Carlos Dunlap, Robinson, and also mixing in Rasheem Green occasionally, your bigger bodied ends. I mean, I told you this before the show, they've got to prove it on the field, but this might be the deepest defensive end group that I've seen the Seahawks have maybe in the last 25 years. And they've had some really good players in that position. But even the 2013 group, if you have Alden Smith and he plays like the Alden Smith we know, stays out of trouble with all the other pieces they've got, this defensive line's loaded. And I'm really excited about those overhang hybrid linebacker defensive ends that really have become interchangeable positions. Now let's talk for our second big topic here from today. I mentioned Robert Kimdiche yesterday. We've talked about him a lot. The newcomers are making splashes, and he obviously was a late signing, but some of the more notable free agent signings that the Seahawks made back in March are making some pretty strong impressions early. And I know you have been excited about Akella Witherspoon dating back to his time at Colorado. He made a play today. Tyler Lockett running a skinny post. Russell Wilson trying to get it to him. That has been a play that those two have been dynamite on. And Akella Witherspoon with those 33-inch arms, he uses that length to get up into the passing lane while the ball is coming down. It would have been a surefire completion. He swats it away. That size, that's the reason Pete Carroll still would prefer to have longer corners like that with athleticism, because of the ability to really close off windows, and in that case, to be able to eliminate a deep ball. I'm really excited about his upside in this defensive scheme. I know he was up and down in San Francisco, but he has always struck me as a perfect, ideal Seahawks corner from an athleticism, ball skills, and size standpoint if he can just put it together.
Man, I actually love college football a bit more than I love the NFL, and I always am watching college football. And usually if I'm thinking about it, I keep on my phone a book or some notes of Seahawks players I watch in college, and I kind of keep notes as I watch. Like, a guy makes a play, like, oh, this is a Seahawks kind of guy. And every time I watch Colorado, which wasn't very often because they haven't been very good, but every time I turned on a Colorado game, I would just, this Witherspoon guy, I think he looks exactly like a Seahawks corner. And I was pretty bummed when the Seahawks didn't take him. Now, it was a bit validated with his struggles in the 49ers, but it seemed like he came on strong later. Yeah, he is every bit 6'2", every bit the 33-inch wingspan, or arms. I think that he's got some huge upside. Now, I think the ceiling, or the floor, is also a bit lower than some of the other guys, maybe, you know, vying for a roster spot. But I think the ceiling is about as high as anybody else. It's one of those cliches. I'm really excited for Akella Witherspoon. He just, especially if they're going to go on the shorter end, you know, the DJ Reeds or the Trey Browns on one side, I think you still need a guy like Akella Witherspoon with that just daddy long leg, you know, basketball player kind of stature on the other side, making plays with his length.
A lengthy eraser. Pete Carroll loves to have those on the outside. Right now, I'm sticking with him and DJ Reed as the front runners to win starting jobs. A long way to go, though. Somebody else could emerge in the next few weeks, and maybe Witherspoon has some rough practices, but made that really nice play. Had another play he was involved in that led to a pass deflection today. So he looks pretty good here the first couple days, and I thought he looked pretty good in their OTAs and mini camps as well, coming back from a minor knee procedure. So a lot to be excited about. Speaking of being excited, Gerald Everett, towards the end of today's practice, this got the crowd fired up, because obviously coming over with Shane Waldron, that kind of was a package, the two of them. Somebody that's familiar with the scheme that Waldron's going to be incorporating in Seattle. The most athletic tight end that they've had in a while, a guy that can stretch the seams, you can move around, even has ran the ball a few times in his NFL career. You just don't see many athletes like that at tight end. Seattle has not had a guy like that. He's expected to potentially be the number three target for this team. Even if Dwayne Eskridge comes back, he might be the third most targeted player on this team because of his familiarity with this offense. And the fact he's still only 26 going on 27, he's just entering his prime. He caught his first touchdown from Russell Wilson today, and it was a fantastic play. Wilson actually somewhat underthrew this pass, and Ben Burkervin was in coverage. I got to give BBK a lot of credit. He was all over Gerald Everett, had him blanketed, but the throw actually being underthrown worked in Everett's favor. He was able to adjust to the throw, kept his feet in bounds, and caught the ball in the end zone for six. And so that was just one of those. The throw ended up beating the coverage, even though it was underthrown. And the Seahawks are now hopeful that they're going to be seeing that a lot on the practice field, and hopefully a lot during the regular season. Those two hooking up in the red zone, and in that case, it was like a 35-yard touchdown. They're hoping to be able to see those two hook up on some of those big plays now that Gerald Everett's got an upgrade at the quarterback position.
Kind of a hint on what you're going to maybe see from the Shane Waldron offense too. I wrote about how Will Dissly is probably going to be a bounce back candidate this year. I just think the offense fits with him having a better statistical season. And Gerald Everett, obviously he knows the system, and only one tight end for the Seahawks last year, Jacob Hollister, reached 40 targets, and Gerald Everett had 62 last year. And in fact, he has back-to-back seasons of at least 60 targets. So you're talking about an offense that really likes to emphasize the tight end. And like you mentioned, a much better quarterback to do so. And you know that Russell Wilson is going to love connecting with tight ends that can move the chains, that you can find in the end zone, fight for the football and in 50-50 chances. And I think Gerald Everett was a great pickup. He can be a guy that you can lean on with this offense if you got questions, or you need a key down, and you need to trust a guy that knows this offense, that knows how to get open, that knows the timing. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But it's Gerald Everett. I think that he's going to be, if he doesn't put up the big sexy numbers, he's going to be one of those typical guys where you can't judge just the box score on his impact on this roster, because he just brings so much more than that. But I also expect his box score, I think that he really could have a career year. Because you're right, he is entering his athletic prime with an upgraded quarterback. That cannot be understated.
Let's swing out to the outside, because I think this has taken on much greater importance. And maybe it's not that big of a deal when we're talking about the number three receiver spot, because we don't know how long Dwayne Eskridge is going to be out. It sounds like maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. There's some uncertainty there as he still deals with his big toe injury, trying to finish working his way back. Sounds like he is feeling much better. Now they just got to get him in shape enough to be ready to roll and be able to participate in training camp practice, not have any setbacks. But with him being out, you really have a two-horse race that's emerging for the number four receiver spot, and maybe even could be in competition for number three, depending how long Dwayne Eskridge is out. It looks like this is Freddie Swain, last year's sixth-round pick, going up against former undrafted player out of Georgia State, Penny Hart. And I've obviously been high on Penny Hart. He had a great OTAs and minicamp. Freddie Swain exceeded expectations as a rookie last year. But it seems like those two players right now, they seem to be head and shoulders above the rest of the competition. Now, maybe somebody like Kate Johnson ends up playing his way up the depth chart later in training camp. We're only 2 days in. But right now, those two guys, it seemed like today they realized we're competing against each other, because one guy would make a play and then another one would make a play a few minutes later, and then the other one would come back. It really is competition at its finest, and both these guys made some spectacular plays today as they're vying for that number four spot and more snaps, catching passes potentially from Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, with Freddie Swain, he needs to build on some of the momentum he had from last year. And physically, they are a bit different. You know, Freddie Swain's about 6 foot, almost 200. Penny Hart's, I think he's every bit of 5'8" with cleats on. But I think if you're talking about who's going to make the roster, I mean, certainly Penny Hart brings that value of special teams with the 5 special teams tackles last year, 13 games. But if you're talking about having him emerge as a fourth receiver, yeah. Pete Carroll is an internal optimist. He talks up a lot of players, which we love him for, but he doesn't throw around the word trust a lot. Yeah. And he trusts Penny Hart, and he has said so. And I think that's not insignificant. And if he continues to build on that, he absolutely can have an inside track on a fourth spot. And I hope Eskridge can get out there, because you mentioned with Gerald Everett possibly being the third receiver per se with targets and everything. There's gonna be some hungry hippos for targets down in the 4-5 range, and they're going to be scrapping for the leftovers. And I think Penny Hart and Freddie Swain can smell it, but I really like Penny Hart. And I think that trust thing is one of those things you can't really see in the stats and the Pro Football Reference page, but the coaches certainly take notice.
I think both those guys are making this roster as of right now. And again, it's very early in camp. Things can change. There could be injuries, hopefully not, but we know that's a reality when we're talking about professional football. But seeing what these two guys did today, again, they were exchanging big plays back and forth. And Swain didn't make any like highlight reel grabs, but he was getting a bunch of yards after the catch on crossers. And we know that's an area that's going to be big in this offense for Shane Waldron, if it's anything like Sean McVay's system. And then Penny Hart at 5'8", as you mentioned, he's going up against Jordan Miller, who is just all over him. There's a penalty that is called by the official out on the field during their scrimmage time, and Hart just high points the football with that 5'8 frame. Fearless, jumps up, snags the ball, hangs on to possession of it all the way to the ground. It was one of the best plays. I think it's the best play that we've seen in the first 2 days of training camp. And he had a couple spectacular catches in their mini camp back in June as well. A one-handed grab on the final day in the end zone for a touchdown. he and Russell Wilson just seem to have that chemistry, that rapport that Wilson does not have with every receiver there. And Freddie Swain, those two seem like they have a pretty good chemistry as well. So this is going to be a lot of fun seeing those two players compete against each other. And this is what Pete Carroll wants. This is what he craves. Guys like that, that are in a friendly yet fierce competition, both probably making this roster, but they're battling for snaps. There's no question about it. And on special teams as well, both these guys can return punts and kicks. They can go down and cover punts and kicks. They're going to be doing anything they can to make this roster and have a bigger role. That's been the difference between guys like Hart and Swain and, say, John Ursua, who just has not been able to stand out on special teams at all and honestly has not done much on the offensive side of the ball. He did have one catch today, but this really does feel like it's a two-horse race, and we're talking about that fourth receiver spot. And, again, they could play into the number three depending on the injury significance for Eskridge. Let's go to the third quarter here. Wrapping up our storylines from day two, we're going to switch over to the safety position, continuing our training camp preview. Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, both expected to be in the lineup in week one. They've got a lot of depth at that position as well. We're going to be looking at three key questions and, of course, dishing our bold predictions for the safety position group when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee, continuing to break down each position on Seattle's roster. Now that we are 2 days into training camp, let's get back to the secondary. There's been plenty of talk about that back half of the defense in the show already. We've talked Jamal Adams. We talked to Kella Witherspoon. Let's look at the safety group as a whole, because you and I, I'm sure, can agree with two Pro Bowlers coming back. Jamal Adams is going to be in the lineup in week one. I'm going to sit here right now and guarantee that he is in the lineup week one, and I guarantee he has a contract. Maybe it doesn't happen the next few days, but I think it's coming soon. And Quandre Diggs, he's entering the final year of his contract, but not holding out. He's practicing, doing all the right things out there in the field. Every guy has different circumstances. So both those players are expected to be starting in week one. They've got Ryan Neal coming back. They have a player like Demaryius Randall, who's listed as a corner, but he can play safety. Marquise Blair can play safety in a pinch. His natural position, has played nickel corner for the Seahawks now. Been playing some safety the first 2 days today. Got a couple other players like Ashari Crosswell coming out of Arizona State, undrafted rookie, and Joshua Moon, who's been in the league for a couple years but hasn't been able to stick with the team. A lot of the same characters for the most part that we saw last year. One of the deepest positions on the roster. They have had some injury concerns here, but I think the first big question that we've got to address here, talking those contracts, will we see Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs both get extended before the start of the regular season? I think that that is one of the most critical questions when you're looking at the future of this football team.
Ooh, before the season starts, that's a loaded question. I think my gut says no. I think you're right. Adams is absolutely going to be extended any day now. Probably, hopefully, sometime next week at worst. Diggs, yes, obviously you want him here. He's a Pro Bowl safety. I think he's really coming to his own in Seattle. Clearly, he likes playing here. We like him. And it seems like him and Jamal Adams work well together. In fact, I would go ahead and say they're a top three safety duo in the NFL right now. And but I just think with so much going on, especially as we just talked about with Dwayne Brown, there's a lot of people on the table still that need contracts, and that's gonna be pushing it for a month to get all this done. And so I think that they do both get done. I think that Diggs I would say I'm about 60% he's coming back after a contract extension. But I'm hard pressed to believe that both of them are going to get fully done in the next month. That seems like a pretty tall order, But John Schneider, I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's one of the best in the business. So if anyone can do it, he can.
And I've made the argument several times over the past couple months. And I know a lot of people are looking at the overall cost. You're going to be spending more than $30 million on safeties, because I think Quandre Diggs has absolutely earned a 10, 11, maybe even $12 million per year contract. I think he is a top 10 safety in the NFL. He's one of only five players at the position that's got 8 or more interceptions the last 2 years, and he's done it in less games than any other guy on that list. I think 6 less games than the next guy on that list. So he's been extremely productive. He's a hard hitter for his size. He's very likable in the locker room. He's a player that the coaches and his teammates respect him. And again, you mentioned it, the people in Seattle love him. Ever since he's come here via trade from the Lions, he has been embraced by Seahawk fans. So I think he wants to continue playing here. I know that's a lot of money, but safety is a critical position in Pete Carroll's defense. So I would still argue that you absolutely got to find a way to lock them both up. If Diggs was a couple years older, then maybe I'd be a bit more cautious about it, but he's only 28 years old. Both these guys are in the prime of their careers. I think Diggs has another 3-4 really solid seasons left in him. So I absolutely would pay him, but I anticipated that the Adams deal might get done before camp gets rolling. That has not happened. Dwayne Brown has not been extended. I thought Diggs was number 3 in that pecking order. So if those first two aren't done, then I don't see Diggs getting done anytime soon either, which creates a conundrum because they typically have not given players extensions during the season. Not that it has never happened, but typically that is not the time where they do business. They're focused on football. That would allow Quandre Diggs to potentially hit free agency next March, and I think he would be one of the most coveted players on the market at that position. So that leads to the second key question here. We know Marquise Blair is now healthy. He's looked pretty good the last 2 days at training camp, coming back from his ACL tear. He participated in mini camp. He had a really nice pass deflection today, swatting the ball out of DK Metcalf's hands. We know how difficult that can be going against DK Metcalf. So they're still very high on Marquise Blair. I think he's going to win the starting slot corner job back. Uguamadi is going to be a really legitimate contender against him, but I think that Blair wins that job. But with him playing safety right now and the fact that he can play free safety and strong safety, does his presence end up impacting what Seattle decides to do with Diggs and his future here?
I think it's hard not to acknowledge that. Obviously, he's cheaper, and at least for now. And if he can maintain health and show and make a strong showing when in Adams's absence here at taking reps with the ones at safety, and then slide over to the slot corner and have a great season there. Say that he plays most of the year there and has success, and those two safeties go on their merry way with great seasons, and one of those deals is not done. I think that the Seahawks would take a long, hard look at Marquise Blair being one of the safeties of the future. I really do. Because you mentioned the price point for Quandre Diggs, I think will be a subject. North of $10 million. You list guys like, so who would you rather have, Quandre Diggs or, you know, John Johnson, Marcus Williams, Marcus May, Devin McCourty? These are all guys making over $10 million per year. So I think I'd rather have Quandre Diggs over just about every one of those guys. And so that's going to be an expensive ask. And for that reason, if Marquise Blair can maintain health and have it and, you know, build on that momentum he started last year in game one, he had a really strong first game against the Falcons last year before he went down in week two. If he can continue, and even if it's just as a slot corner, just have success and be healthy, I really think the Seahawks would take a long, hard look at him replacing Quandre Diggs and probably saving a bit of money off the cap.
It's the business of football, like Bobby Wagner said today. That is what it is first and foremost. Yes, it's a sport, but it is a business. We're talking a billion-dollar business that is the NFL. And so that is going to be a difficult decision for them. I still think you re-sign both players, but yeah, that is going to be a lot of money to invest in a non-quarterback position and even a non-offensive line position. But safeties are pretty critical in Pete Carroll's defense. As far as sleepers go, I've normally been throwing names out of the other position groups, but this really feels like one to me, unless there are injuries, which of course, again, they can happen any practice. Hopefully they don't. Hopefully the safety group stays healthy. But barring injury, I don't see how you have guys like Ashari Crosswell or Joshua Moon make this roster. I could see Crosswell being a player that's intriguing as a practice squad candidate because he was really productive his first 2 years at Arizona State. He's got good size. He did not have a single missed tackle his sophomore season at Arizona State. So he's a sound tackler, good ball skills, but didn't really get a chance to do anything last year because of COVID, ended up leaving the team to prepare for the draft. There were a few character questions there. Hasn't really stood out to this point. Not a lot of reps for some of those undrafted guys through 2 days. We'll see what happens when the pads go on, but it really feels like this is going to be a group that's going to be Adams, Diggs, Ryan Neal, and Marquise Blair probably as your backup safeties. Ugo Amadi can play safety as well. It really feels like it'd be hard-pressed to have anybody else make this team.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like you're sticking a square peg into a round hole trying to fit anyone else in there. Yeah. So I'm not going to fluff it up and say, oh, yeah, watch out for this guy. You know, I'm not going to blow smoke there. Obviously, injuries, like you mentioned, would play a huge role in one of those other guys rising. And sometimes that's great, and they could turn out to be fine players. But reality is if everything's equal, all health assuming, yeah, I don't see a ton of surprise there. I think we have our guys, and we're going to roll with those four.
Let's talk bold predictions here real quick. And my bold prediction, Jamal Adams is going to become the first defensive back in NFL history to have double-digit sacks. Now, I know he was very close to doing it last year, 9.5, but that is a lot of sacks for defensive back. And sacks can be a statistic that year-to-year can be difficult to predict. I think he's going to get to 11. I almost thought 12, but I'm going to go with the sweet spot being 11 sacks for Jamal Adams. I think he's just scratching the surface of what he can do in this defense. He got comfortable second half last year, even while dealing with injuries that he eventually needed surgery on in the offseason. I'm expecting big things from him, especially with the defensive line that we talked about earlier that they've got that's going to be harassing quarterbacks. Adams is just another guy that offensive lines and offensive coordinators have to fear when game planning for.
You made a good twist on that because I was going to say, you know, that's pretty bold, especially with the fact that I think this pass rushing unit is much deeper than last year. You kind of turned it on as they have more to worry about, so Adams will be more free to make plays. That's a good point. My bold prediction is I know he's a former Ute, so it's kind of weird to like be high on Marquise Blair as a BYU guy. I hate being high on Ute guys, but they do produce some really good defenders. Kyle Whittingham knows what he's doing in Salt Lake in that department. I think he's going to start at least two games at safety this year. I know he's probably going to be the starting nickel corner, all things assuming, you know, health and everything. But with, you know, we saw Jamal Adams plays with his hair absolutely on fire, and we love him for it. But unfortunately, that could lead to getting nicked up here or there. And I think Marquise Blair, you know, could slide over to that, to the strong safety spot. Ugo takes the nickel corner spot for a couple weeks. You know, if Jamal Adams needs a breather or Quandre Diggs goes down for a game or two, you know, that stuff happens. It's hard to play now 17 games. I don't think it's that bold now that it's 17 games. That's a lot of playing. That's a lot of snaps for these defenders, and you're going to get some nicks and bruises. And I think that Marquise Blair is going to sneak in there, make a couple starts at safety.
Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast in the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. I would maybe wait till tomorrow because it's been kind of a tough day for Nick. We'll just leave it at that. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on a Friday show, I'm going to be sharing my thoughts on what to expect as the Seahawks move into their third training camp practice on Saturday, plus a close look at the guards and centers, continuing our position-by-position review. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.